No, Mike's laughing at my choice.
Well, it is a raw day.
That it is.
It sure is a lousy day to go fishing today. Actually, it might not be a bad day to be on the creek if you had like one of those pop-up tents, a raincoat, a portable fire pit.
I'd have to have a little fire heater going. I'd have the little Mr. Heater going there by me.
All right. Go fish. Yes, here we are. It's Radio Fish Against Fish and Frank. In the chair across from me is Greg. And in the... Greg, I'm sorry,
Jeff. Let me talk as loud as Greg.
Oh, God.
And add a few bombs in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm still getting over having Greg in that chair. But we have Jeff, one of our fishing instructors, and
Hello.
Jeff will take you out and go out with you in your boat, show you where to go, what to do, how to do it all, and all that stuff. And I doubt if there's anybody alive who knows the Peace River or Mayak River better than Jeff. And then we've Captain Mike on the other side, and Captain Mike is fisherman, you've been with me, 11, 12 years now?
12 years almost now.
Almost 12 years.
Yep, getting there.
And Mike has been, what, 5, 6?
6, somewhere in 6.
Yep. Somewhere in the 6, 7 years you've been here.
Yeah.
Time goes fast.
Yeah. Yes, it really does.
Seems to be speeding up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's all about. No. I'm not saying I'm exactly happy with it, either.
No.
No.
Every time I get out to go do something. But one of the reasons we were doing this, we got Captain Mike Fitzgerald, and we have Jeff Calkins, our fishing instructor. And Jeff is really, really into the whole Peace River stuff. And
yeah.
Mike, you like camping and all that kind of stuff, right?
Used to do a lot of it.
Used to do a lot of it. Now, Jeff, you got a little twist to this.
Yeah.
You take off and go up river, but you kind of camp and boat and fish and hunt and everything all in the...
Well, before I started fishing and I had a boat, I was probably a menace to most fishermen because I didn't fish. I was more into the speed and we drove the river and all that. So, you know, I didn't get into fishing, actually.
You used to have one of those little go-fast boats, didn't you?
About 75-mile-an-hour boat, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, people didn't like me too much that fished. But now I'm one of those fishing people, so now I don't like the jet skis.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody...
I don't even think the people on the jet skis really like them.
They're pretty nice, but they serve their purpose.
Yeah. Well, it's just that when you see them on the jet skis, they don't look like they're enjoying themselves. And they got to come around you and do dirt donuts and circles and splash in the
Same
water.
Same thing I used to do when I had a boat.
I mean, it's kind of like, look at me, I'm having fun. I'm going to convince myself I'm having fun with this.
Right,
you know?
Right.
That's what it always kind of appeared to be. It's like, okay, I'm really bored. Well, if I go over and bother him, that'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We did have a guy in here the other day that's got a jet ski set up just for fishing.
Yeah.
I think it's smart because, I mean, you can run in nothing and go almost anywhere.
Go almost anywhere and a little amount of gasoline and a little imprint on the land. Yeah, that's very good.
You know, carry a little anchor with you, drop the anchor on it, just go wade fishing.
Exactly. A lot of places you can go that other people can't get to, that's for sure.
Yeah, but just keep in mind the idle speed and slow speeds apply to
everybody.
Jet skis as well as boats.
Sure enough.
Even if you're waiting, you're not allowed to run in an idle zone.
You gotta go slow.
You must go slow.
I don't know if he had a trolling motor on it or not. I didn't ask him.
Yeah, right.
Wouldn't
probably
that
pretty
be
hard,
cool?
Pretty hard to mount that on there.
You can put him on a kayak. You know,
that's true.
Thinking about it, I mean, that would be pretty much kick butt. I mean,
somewhere somebody's thinking about how they can do it. Right
now. Mount it, put a bracket on the back, and mount a trolling motor, and just be able to cruise along the shoreline on that.
That'd be cool.
That really would be cool.
Yep.
So anyway, but a lot of people don't associate the Peace River with camping, even though once you get out of Charlotte County, you are allowed to camp on the islands and stuff.
Yes, you're allowed to camp on the islands. You're allowed to camp within 25 feet of the water line. We'll just put it that way. That'd probably be the easiest thing for everybody to deal with. But
and
there's a lot of neat camping places up the river. All
and they're
the
already
way up
set
through.
Up. I mean,
a lot
people
of them
use
are
them
set
all the
up.
Time.
Yeah, a lot of them are set up. Unfortunately, I usually bring trash home with me every time. But you know, I've been doing it for ever since I've been boating, so it's kind of second nature to me to bring a garbage bag with me. And
yeah, if you're one that feels the need to not carry a bag with you for your own bodily functions,
right,
and if you're not going to pick up your garbage, stay off our river.
That would be nice.
If you're just a lazy, drunken bum who, I mean, go out and drink and have a good time, but if you're too lazy to pick up your own trash, move somewhere else. We don't want you.
Yeah, because I mean, people go up the river because it's so pretty.
Yeah, it's
and
beautiful.
It's
up
taken
there.
It a long time to come back. You know, it's still, you can still see some little signs, but I mean, for the most part, you couldn't even tell anything has happened.
Yeah,
know?
Charlie was very devastating.
Yeah, it was.
It did follow the path of the river.
It went right up through there. Yeah,
and that the eye wall of the hurricane literally followed the river north and just major devastation.
Yeah,
and then they
good.
Started cleaning up and ruined it more by trying to clean it up.
I don't know who came up with that plan, but they did come in after the storm and they cleaned up all the debris that was under the river bank all the way up to the trestles up past 770s.
And all the fish habitat and everything else, they just jerked it all out of the water.
So it's taken it a while. But I will say this year has been really above year for the snook fishing, for the red fishing up the river. It seems to be coming back. Not like it was, but it seems to be coming back. So that's a good thing as far as that goes, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the worst year ever in the Peace River was 1971.
Yeah, they had a burn, didn't they?
It was the phosphate dump.
Yeah, the phosphate dump. That burned the river,
Yeah, it just wiped 98% of all life. We used to have sturgeon in the river. We used to have all kinds of fish in the river. And they were all went extinct. Yep. I mean, several species went extinct because all they did with the phosphate mine was they took a bulldozer and opened up the thing and dumped it down the river.
Yeah,
it was cheaper than paying the fines.
Yeah, cheaper than paying the fine that they would have to clean it all up, apparently, is how that happened. But
So there was, back in the 70s, there was no harm, no foul. It was like $10,000 fine. It would cost $500,000 to clean it.
Yes,
so.
Exactly, yeah.
Anyway,
but we do a lot of
it's nice
of camping.
Now.
Yeah, it is nice, and we do a lot of camping on the river. I mean, you can take a tent and pitch your tent. You can still have a fire. Set up your camp area. There is a tide flow, though. I mean, a lot of people go up there, they camp, next day they get up and the boat's on dry ground. They don't realize that there is a tidal flow up there, and it goes as far up the river as you can ride.
And the weird part about it is, the less the river's flowing, the less tidal effect there is.
Yeah.
But when you look on fishandfranks.com, go to Weather and Tides, go down to the bottom of that page, and you'll click Peace River button, and the bottom graph shows you the height in Arcadia.
Mm-hmm.
For every little bit above 2 feet, you get a lot of tidal influence because as the tide comes in, it backs the river up.
Yeah, keeps it from
slows flowing out. It down, and so it builds up water. And then when the tide goes out, it's literally like you're flushing the toilet, and all that water just evacuates.
Yeah, it dumps out pretty
and
good.
That's what causes that dramatic tidal effect up the river. Now, the more it's below 2 feet in Arcadia, the less tidal effect you really have there.
Water just can't really go up that far then when it gets down that low.
Yeah, it gets about up to a little past Horse Creek, about Iron Lake.
Yeah, well, they got that real big sandbar there in front of Iron Lake, and it actually gets to a point where that water just won't go past that spot because there's only probably 3 or 4 inches of water later in the wintertime. That's what we're going to see.
Oh, there. Yeah. I've been up there with my boat, and it's a real challenge for me to get across with my skiff, and
I
run pretty darn shallow.
Yeah.
And literally, you go over a little mini waterfall right there, and it's going up it is always kind of a mind boggle.
Yeah, right.
Because I love the cruise up the river, because when you leave down here, you're in a saltwater environment. You got mangroves, and then you go through the sawgrass, and then you get into the
oaks
mixed
and palms.
The oaks, and then the cypress.
Yep.
And at one point, you're going up river, it looks like Africa.
Yeah, it does. Mm.
It really,
they filmed a lot of movies down here.
Oh, yeah, Tarzan was filmed there and all those other things. And I've never been to Africa. I've been all over Europe and Central America and North America, but never Africa. But every movie I've ever seen of Africa, it looks like that.
It does.
It looks like the plains, because, I mean, you look out with the weird grass and everything. But as you're going up, do you find this time of year it should be pretty pleasant up there, even though it's kind of cold? Does it hold the bugs down a little more?
Yeah, it calms the bugs down a little bit more. You get away from them. You know, I tend to go up the river more when we start getting these heavy north winds, you know, and that way I don't have to deal with the heavy chop of the harbor a lot of times.
So you're going to river to hide from the wind.
A lot of times we do, yeah. A lot of times we do. I don't know if it's too good for cold, but it does definitely for the wind.
Yeah. I don't think you would really escape cold. So what's camping like up the river now?
Well, camping's real nice up there, you know, especially this time of year where the bugs are calming down. You don't have to worry about as many of them. The water's a little lower, but that gives you a little more beach area. So if you have any kids with you or whatever, you know, you don't have to really worry about them being right along the riverbank and being water to woods. It's more like water, and then you have a little bit of a beach, and then the woods.
Yeah, a little nicer area to recreate on.
In the summertime, it's kind of hard to camp, not only because of the bugs, but just the water levels get higher. And during the high tide, you could be very close to the water. Way closer than you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a few inches of water in your tent. You go to sleep and everything's nice, and then you wake up, you got water in the tent.
Roll over in your arms in water, yes. We've had that happen a few times to our guys.
But one of the things I like about up there is it's calm and it's peaceful, and it seems like you really don't know anybody else exists. It's pretty calm up there. Now, I prefer aluminum boat up there to fiberglass.
I like them both, but the aluminum's so much lighter. If you have any problems, you can, you know, usually get yourself off of it.
You can drag it across sand.
You could, fiberglass boat, usually you're not going to drag a bay boat or a flats boat too far.
Right. Know? Aluminum boats up the river are actually a little bit better. They'll take a bump better. Aluminum will dent where fiberglass knocks holes
crack
in it.
And
So, and it's not like the harbor. The harbor, you can run around, it's safe, because you're going to run aground.
Yeah.
Now, Carl did find some massive obstruction underwater and snapped the motor in half.
But I think you actually
have to be Carl to do that. Yeah. I've never actually experienced anything like that before.
Yeah, but I've never seen. I've seen transoms knocked out of boats on the river because of trees.
A lot of trees in the water upriver. And
I've never seen a motor break where his broke at.
Now, one of the things about up the river is every year at this time, you really have to almost relearn it.
Yeah.
Because all summer you had the high water. You had a 12-foot of water in Arcadia for a while, and it's less than 2 feet now.
Yeah, it was pretty high this year.
So you get trees that kind of tumble down the river, and they'll roll and move up and down the river.
Yeah, they're constantly getting rolled downriver, and they actually get rolled into the sand, and sometimes they disappear, you know, because the sand's moving too. There's a good example of that, the sandbar that's just above the 776 bridge there, or 761.
761
bridge. There's a big, huge sandbar there, and it's constantly moving down through the bridge area. And if you don't go far to the left of it, then you'll end up on, you know, a foot of water depth. Which
if you're lucky, you got a foot. Because when I go under 761, going north up the river, I bear hard to the left. I'm 30 feet off the trees.
Yeah.
Even though you have this big, wide expanse, it's got to be almost at least an eighth of a mile wide.
Yeah,
there.
I would say eighth or a quarter mile wide
eighth,
there.
Quarter
that
mile.
Section there. Yeah, it's pretty wide.
But you really only have the
20
left,
feet.
Yeah, that left one quarter of it where you can get a boat through and go up and just get straight in line with the channel going up the main channel. It doesn't go straight at that point. A lot of people run up and get in that kind of forked area at the end, and you're kind of forked
once you get in there. Yeah, you can get in there, and that's actually a pretty good place to fish a lot of times.
I love snook fishing there.
Yeah.
Now, I'll take that storm twitch bait and work all those trees and branches in there. Yeah,
that's a good bait
for that. Keep your trolling motor barely under the water. Because you have water, don't put it down, because there's tons of branches under the water. There are logs and trees and stuff like that.
Yeah, you'll find out with those when you get your twitch bait in there. Usually you'll have to go back and get it a couple times.
Well, that's why I like the anything that's a little more floating back there, because I'll kind of give it a little twitch.
Yeah.
And the hard thing is not setting the hook when it taps the branch.
I've hooked a branch good that way.
Yeah, you got to actually, when you're twitching the lure back out of the away from the bank, because you're casting up to the bank and you're twitching it back out, wait for the fish to pull before you set the hook.
Yeah.
Because if you tap a branch and you let go and you just hold your rod still, the lure will float up away from the branch.
Yeah.
But if you set the hook,
now
you got to go get it.
It's there.
Now, there's a lot of campgrounds just over the DeSoto County line.
Yeah.
If you're going up the river and you say, well, how far up is the county line? Well, Charlotte County is, we have the worst parks and recs
We do.
In the state. There is nothing as bad as Charlotte County Parks and Recs. Yeah. They can screw up more things. Our county planners and our county people who, you know, decide how the parking is going to go, the boat ramps and everything else. Atrocious. I mean, just dropped on their head as children. Yeah. They're nice people, but completely useless. Go to Punta Gorda. It's gorgeous. Go to Port Charlotte. And if you want the definition of how to do it wrong, just look around.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't allow you to camp on the islands, even though it would be no problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, but that's a case of one bad egg ruined it for everybody. There was a houseboat up there just south of the Navigator, and they had been living there behind the one island on their houseboat for probably 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
And somebody got sick of it. They'd probably been dumping some of their sewage back there too, because I don't think anybody ever saw the boat go anywhere.
Right.
And that was part of the reason. And one day we went up there, the DEP, the DNR, everybody was up there, and they kicked those guys out.
That's how they got the homeless out of the woods right behind us here on Bayshore, is they really didn't have any law to get them out except defecating in the woods,
which is
actually a very expensive fine.
Yes, yeah, not a felony, but a very good fine.
Yeah, it's a very high, very expensive misdemeanor.
Yeah,
you do have to go to court and all that if you get caught, you know, doing that in the woods.
Yeah, after they took the boat out, though, they pretty much canned anything in Charlotte County for camping on those islands down there. And you know, I mean, there's kind of very few places to actually camp from the Navigator south. It's a lot of sawgrass and you know, and then you get private land on both sides of the river. So,
but if you want to know how to tell when you get into DeSoto County, as you're going up river, Charlotte County has the whole river marked with channel markers, red and green markers.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you come up to one marker and it's red and green both.
Yep.
That means it's over.
Yeah.
And now you're in DeSoto County.
Now you're in DeSoto. And then you go past the Navigator because that's right at the county line also.
Oh, no. It's
way south of that.
Way south of there. Yeah. You know, literally it's Island Harbor 33.
Heights. Yeah.
It's only three quarters of a mile north of Harbor Heights on the river is where the markers stop, and that's the DeSoto-Charlotte line.
And there's not many places down there to really camp. I mean,
no, when you get up and you just cross into there, you got Island 33, campgrounds on both sides of that. Yep. You got them across the river on that island, and there's about four or five places right there. They're mostly day spots. I don't see a lot of people spending the night there.
Not too many, and they're usually taken up on the weekends pretty quick.
Oh, yeah. And then you get up around the water treatment plant on that shoal around there. Mm-hmm. And then up at Horse Creek, you get a lot of people on the sandbars there.
Yeah, a lot of people camp up from Horse Creek on up. And you'll be able to tell the areas are pretty obvious where the people are camping at.
So, now, Mike, you fish the river on and off occasionally. How do you like the river? What do you think about what goes on up there?
Probably most of the fishing that I've done over the years was up on the Myakka River.
So,
you know,
how's the Myakka compared to the Peace?
Well,
it's beautiful. Actually.
It's a lot smaller and a lot prettier, I think. You know, because you're right up close to everything, and you got a lot of trees in the water. You got a lot of birds right there next to the water. I mean, just so much more
intimate.
Yeah,
it is
actually. You know, and it looks more like a jungle up there in a lot of places.
Yeah, it does.
Well, the Myakka River and the Peace River, the majority of the Tarzan movies were shot on the Myakka.
Yeah.
And when they needed the big trees for Johnny Weissmuller to jump in the water with, they would go up the Peace River. And because that area just, I forget, before the area around Horse Creek there used to have a bunch of massive cypress trees there.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you look close at the old Johnny Weissmuller movies, he's jumping out of cypress trees.
Right.
Yeah. He's got big vines going through the cypress.
Yeah, the Myakka is a really pretty place.
Yeah. Well, it was more conducive to filming.
Yeah. And it's an idle speed and a scenic
river. Big word
there,
I got in.
You won't really see any trips up there. You know, no guides usually go up the Myakka because
it's all slow speed.
It's all scenic river.
It's idle speed.
Yeah, and it's very good for that.
It's a gold mine for fishermen if you're not in a hurry.
Yeah, if you're not in a hurry, for sure.
There's a lot of bends, a lot of stuff in the water.
And, a lot more structure than the Peace River has.
I fished mostly above Snook Haven when we were bass fishing, and of course it's been quite a few years, and it's time they were doing a lot of diving up there for fossils too.
They're still doing a lot of fossil hunting in the Peace River and Myakka River because every year it changes.
Yeah.
As you get a big rain, we'll get one of these massive rainstorms come through, and just a wall of water comes in and cuts the banks a little bit differently, and next thing you know, we get more fossils showing up.
Yep.
It's
exposes everything over again.
Yeah, you as every foot you get down is another 10,000 years.
Yep. Know?
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So, now when you're fishing the river, Jeff, you do a lot of trolling.
I do almost exclusively trolling up there. I'll troll bombers, Rapalas, any of those lures. I'll troll
2-inch, 4-inch.
I usually
six
go
inch.
For 4s and 6s. You know, I want a big lure with a big vibration. I'm trolling at anywhere from 3 to 6 knots, which may sound fast for a lot of guys that troll, but these snook in the river are pretty aggressive, and they want something that they can feel, I think. And I usually
What's
have a lot
best
better
color?
Luck. Black, gold, and orange has been my best color, but chartreuse works very well. And if I'm somewhere where I don't know where I'm at, I'll try to get mostly a chrome lure, whether it has a black back or a green back. They all seem to work pretty good. Purple is another color that works in the darker waters of our area, whether you're at the Myakka or the Peace River. Purple seems to be a really good color.
Now, Mike, when you're on the Myakka, did you do much lure fishing up there?
Yeah, well, we didn't. Well, mostly it was rubber worms and stuff, you know, which was kind of hard to deal with. Start out with, we weren't catching anything until we realized you had to throw way ahead of where you wanted to go so that the worm would come through at the right zone. You know, it had to sink enough to be able, when you got to the log, it was at the right depth
where
the fish were in. And it took a while to adjust to that, but you know, after that it wasn't too bad. We threw a few hard baits, didn't have a whole lot of luck. The only thing that I ever The only bass I ever caught on a hard bait was on a looked like a crayfish.
Mm-hmm.
It was a diving lure.
Yeah. One of the things that people don't realize how many crawdads we have down here. We've got a lot of crayfish in Florida, and they're really good bait. And I still, every time I think of crawdads down here, I was coming in on Flamingo one day, and you know that bridge there?
Yeah.
There must have been 100,000 crawdads crawling across the road.
Cool.
They
All
weren't
right.
even in, you know, not in the water, but I mean literally out of the canal and crawling across the road and going through people's yards and stuff. I'd never seen anything like it ever before or since.
I've seen them in the ditches when the rains run real heavy in the summer times. You can
these
see
were
them.
Going somewhere. They were all headed this, you know, they were I was coming in from 771 and I'm looking on the road going, what is that? And they were just thousands, tens of thousands of them crossing the road. It was the craziest thing I ever saw. Why weren't they in the water?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. They had a mission, I guess.
They were on a mission going somewhere.
Huh.
Maybe they're just like lemmings. They were too thick in one area and they needed to move. Who knows?
But Florida has a lot of crawdads and people forget about it as bait. Now, you're not allowed to pick them up in one body of water and take them to another, but if you catch them in that body of water, you're allowed to use them.
Really?
Well, yeah, but you're not allowed to transport them anywhere.
I didn't know that.
And
just to the fryer, huh?
Yep. And they're good eating.
Oh, yeah.
They're tasty as all get out.
Yep.
But so it makes more sense with what you were saying. People don't realize the massive amounts of crawdads we have here in Florida. They've been thinned out over the last few years, but no, we still have quite a few. Not like they do up in some of the northern states, but it was areas like Wisconsin and all those, Illinois, Indiana, where people use so many crawdads for bait, they got in every lake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they just overpopulated all the lakes. And I don't know if it's still going on, but I know back in the 70s and 80s it was a real problem. Now I think they've calmed it down a little bit. But
got some hungry fishermen from Louisiana up there to help them.
That would have, you know, I never understood why they didn't, I mean.
Why they didn't harvest them.
Harvest them for food, yeah. I mean, they're just terrific eating.
Yeah, they are really good.
So anyway, but yeah, we have a big crawdad population down here in Florida. And I think they're the same ones. Probably somebody brought them down fishing and they just went crazy because everything grows here.
Yeah.
Now, when you're trolling, I'm going to go back to camping for a minute.
Yep.
Because you took you took some time off work and you went up the river. And tell me about your trip. What went on?
Well, I wanted to go up and I've been doing a little bit of hunting. And there is some public land that you can hunt on the river. Again, you have to watch out for that 25 feet of the high water mark on the river, so you're not supposed to be any further back in the woods than 25 feet. But there is some good hunting to be had up there, and if you play your cards right, your the motion of your vehicle, whatever you're in, whatever your mode of transport is in, cannot have any forward or reverse motion in it, but you can fire off of that. Like, you could sit in the boat if it wasn't moving, you could shoot a pig off the riverbank, you know, you could shoot a whatever else if it's in season.
Right, you but you have to be anchored.
But you don't have to be anchored. Just have to be no forward momentum and no engines on.
So the engine's off, engine you can dead, sit in the boat and drift.
Yeah, engine dead, you could anchor, you could drift, whatever you want to do that way, as long as you don't have the boat under power, you know. You just have to look around, and I mean, you'll see animals along
now,
the river.
You took a bow and arrow with you.
I took a crossbow with me.
Okay, well, yeah. Jeff's up there, and literally the largest Southwest Florida deer I have ever seen.
Yeah,
Jeff ended
size.
Up getting up there, and it wasn't an access. It was a real Florida deer.
Yeah, it was a Florida whitetail. Yep.
And nice, how big was it?
6-pointer, about 170, a little over 170 pounds before we started process.
Now, to me, Florida deer are 45 to 95,
90, yeah.
Average about 80 pounds.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Like almost a fawn up north. I
right,
mean, they're like
right.
Big dogs, like great, you know, like Great Danes.
Yeah, we actually have some good-sized deer, though, around.
But 175 pounds is absolutely, you know, yeah. If you live in Pennsylvania, it's no big deal.
Yeah, it's
right,
nothing.
Right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For Florida, 175-pound
yeah,
deer, what happened? Where were you? What was going on? Not where were you, but
right, right.
What were you doing?
Well, you know, I mean, I've got a couple places up there where we'll throw out and we'll bait up stuff, and we'll wait for hogs to come in and stuff. That's the main feed. But the first month of the season, they open up for bow season for deer. And we'd seen deer up there before, and we thought, well, you know, we'll go try it, you know. So we had to go and, of course, get the bows and then practice with them. And we went up and we sat in the boat, and one morning, a place that we had seen deer going through, and we took our shot. We had about at 7:30 in the morning is when we took the shot. And actually, my first deer in Florida.
I got to ask, how bad were you handshaking when that deer came across, 175-pound deer in Florida?
You know, I really didn't take into account how much he was until after we had shot him and found him.
Right.
Because, of course, shot him and he ran, so we had to go track him off and find out where he was. That took us about, probably an hour and a half to find him. And when he ran, all you could hear was water, you know, because that's what he was running through.
Oh, yeah, that's tough.
Figured
that's
we're going to have to swim
tough.
For him, and
yeah.
And no blood, because it was raining.
Right.
So, you know, you got that. But at least I had somebody else with me, and they weren't a novice at tracking or anything like that, so they were pretty good. And
yeah, this
we
is
both
not
agreed
something
on where
you're going to do. You really want to do by yourself. A, you're
yeah.
Very isolated,
yeah.
Very remote location.
Yeah.
B,
a lot of things
it's
can go wrong.
And yeah. It's very hard to do anything
yeah.
On your own. If
yeah.
You've got two people, you can cover four times as much ground in
yeah.
Less time than you can
yeah.
By yourself.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
So, anyway, you're sitting there in the boat, and all of a sudden, was it one or a few?
Just
or?
One. Just the one came in, you know, and it was right as the daybreak was coming. We 7:30. The neighbor that was with me, he's been hunting all his life, and he's like, "It's your deer, man." He goes, "You haven't got one, so it's your time." So took the shot. He took off running. We sat there for probably about a half an hour listening to him, you know, run, and then we got out and we started walking up the riverbank trying to find him, you know. And we took two trails. You could see two deer trails that they were running on, and we walked up the one trail and came back through the water. We had just got done with this high water. I could have actually probably drove the boat to where he was because the water was so high. Usually I'm walking through the woods, but not this year. This year has been
so
pretty wet year.
Did you end up sleeping in the boat?
No, we did not sleep in the boat. We just went up there probably about 2:00 in the morning, got to our spot, set up and waited till daybreak.
Okay, so, but it was pretty cool. And
very cool.
I got to tell you, did you cook that or did Cindy cook that?
Now, the deer that we had the other day, I was informed, was not my deer. It was the deer that Cindy had gotten from a friend of hers. So
okay.
that leg,
I was
that,
like,
that leg
man,
that got
that
cooked
was
up the
good.
Well, that one that I got is going to be cooked up the same way.
Okay, because mm-hmm. that was really tasty.
Yeah,
a guy named Jim McCurdy is the one that gave Cindy that deer leg, and he's also the one that cooked it up. They had a big cook thing over at the Promenades where they did this weekend or yesterday. They had a big deal over there. But he cooked it up, and that deer was actually smoked, but you can't really taste the smoke.
No, I didn't. I would have no idea it was smoked.
Yeah, that was put in a pan with the juice, and they wrapped it about 20 times with aluminum foil. He's got a thing with aluminum foil. He really likes to wrap it up a lot, but everything that he does, just might have a very hint of a smoked taste to it, but really it doesn't taste like that. Deer yesterday tasted like pot roast.
Yeah, it was... pot roast with venison flavor, but
yeah.
No, I mean, I've eaten a lot of venison over the years.
Didn't
I mean,
have
grew
a gamey
up
taste
there,
to it at all.
And it was really one of the tastiest venison I've ever had.
Yeah, that was very exceptional, actually. Jim did a very good job cooking that up. So
yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
Mike, have you done much hunting over the years?
Not here in Florida, so it's been 30-some years ago last time I went.
That's
so.
Like me. 30-some years ago, I used to hunt in Wisconsin and Montana, and I've hunted all over the place, but all when I was younger. When I came to Florida, and I found out everything in the woods wants to bite you, sting you, kill you, poison you, make you itch. I mean, from the plants, the bugs. And back then, they didn't have the aerial spraying and stuff.
No, they sure
so
didn't.
So it was a huge amount of scorpions and, I mean, just snakes. And
if it hadn't been raining that day when we went up there at 2 in the morning, we probably would have been at our wit's end with the mosquitoes. Because at dark, it is just unreal.
Yeah, that's absolutely, that's horror story stuff up there at night.
It is. I mean, it's not too bad. You're
now, when you go camping, what do you look for in equipment to go camping up in the river, knowing the bugs can get that bad?
A tent that says no see-em netting on it would be a big help to anybody that's going to camp anywhere in Florida, actually. The no see-ems are relentless, and... you know, if you're camping around a marsh area on a low tide, you're going to have a lot of no-see-ums. Now, up there, it's more mosquitoes, so you don't have to worry about the no-see-ums.
And they're huge. But they got chiggers up there. It's the same as a no-see-um.
Yeah, they got chiggers up there, too.
It's the same as a no-see-um.
They last longer.
Yeah, they do. We usually put a good tarp down and then put the tent on top of that if we're going to camp in one of the camped areas that are there. And, you know, sometimes I'll go up there the weekend before and spray out some bug spray on the ground. You know, I'll put out a pesticide or an insecticide the week before we know we're going to camp somewhere, and that way most of the bugs are gone.
Yeah, well,
then you just have to worry about the
stuff you get in the plastic jug, and you just spray it on there, the home defense
stuff. Yeah, the home defense works real well.
Yeah, it'll keep an area relatively clear for a week or two. Yeah,
spray our camp area out, you know, if it's, you know, 50 by 50 or whatever. Your tents are only going to be in a 5 by 10 area, but we usually spray a 50 by 50 area, and that way it's all pretty much bug-free that way. You don't have to worry about the ants and... answer would be bad.
I guess just because this is radio fishing, we need to talk a little bit about fishing. Anybody hearing any good stories around the harbor right now?
Around the harbor, I've been hearing that the mackerel have been coming in. I know that guys have been trolling on the river, have been doing really good with the snook. The snook that they've been catching have been really healthy, really nice looking, fat.
Silver and black.
Silver and
beautiful
black.
River fish.
Yeah, silver and black. No yellow on them at all.
No.
You know? But that stuff seems to be coming back. We had a hell of a year for... the tilapia run, and the tilapia, I mean, I haven't seen it this way since before 04.
Yep.
And you know, just big tarpon all the way up to Highway 70 in Arcadia and past that, you know, 150 pound tarpon rolling right beside the boat feeding on these little groups of tilapia. It was really cool.
It was kind of amazing, but prior to June of 1995, when we had that 18 inches of rain in 2 hours, I mean, it rained. I've never seen anything like it. There's 4 feet of water out here on the road.
Yeah.
And you know, we had water, a foot of water coming in the front door and out the back door here inside of Fish and Frank's.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an amazing day. But that kind of really wrecked a lot of the habitat for the flounder and the sawfish. And we're just starting to get the flounder back, just starting with the sawfish back. And that was 95 that happened.
Yep.
And it was the same thing with tilapia. We had a little bit, and then Hurricane Charlie kind of put the kibosh on all that.
This was
the first, it had just started coming back around Charlie.
Yeah.
10 years ago, we started seeing a little bit of tilapia. And this year, it was spectacular.
Yeah, it was a crazy
wall-to-wall.
It was.
Wall-to-wall bait.
Yeah, you could see it everywhere you went up there. Little V's in the water, kind of like the crab trap buoy leaves, and then you get up to it, and you'd be like, "Well, that V's going the wrong way."
Yeah,
you know, and it's a whole school of little fish going around there. Yeah,
they were in my canal; they were everywhere.
And tilapia is another one that you cannot fish with a live, or are you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is there
ignore
some sort
it.
Of gray area
yeah,
there?
Yeah,
or
you're
something?
Not supposed to use them live for bait. You're supposed to kill them and use them for bait. But sorry, come up with another more ridiculous law in Tallahassee. Yeah. You've caught them right there. You're sticking.
They're in the same body of water.
Yeah, you're not moving them from one body of water to the other. Yeah. Tallahassee, get your head out of your buns. I mean. I don't know what's wrong with them up there, but
they do work
as long as you don't transport them from one place or another, and they want you to kill them anyway.
Yeah, invasive species.
Yeah, use them for bait.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not supposed to, and you're not supposed to put them on the hook alive, and it's against the law and all that, but some laws are just stupid.
Yep, that's for sure.
And, you know, sorry, I shouldn't say Tallahassee's mildly brain dead, but have you been on their website
lately?
It's
still a semi-free country.
Yeah, so semi-free anyway. Yeah. This will be censored. I mean, you know, once this goes on, you know, the government will be all the way through there. Oh, they're already tapping in our mics. We know that. But now, if I get arrested, you know, I could use the sleep.
Right. <now. laughs>
I hear the federal.
Let's see, air conditioning, three squares a day.
Yeah, lots of sleep. Yeah. I mean, I could do a little while of that. Yeah. You know, so. Anyway.
Yeah, we've had a really good time up the river this year. I think things are coming back. I think that it's on the mend, but we'll just see what happens. You know, I mean,
because we had a good flush in the river this year.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a flush.
Absolutely.
It was 12 feet of water in Arcadia, in which people don't realize that much water coming down helps clean out the harbor.
Yeah, it does.
It makes it nasty in the harbor for a month or so while all that black water's coming down. But that's all the silt and everything else all being pushed out of the harbor, and it helps clean this area up. It's what keeps Charlotte Harbor alive.
Not only that, but it's food for shrimp and other mollusks and crustaceans and little crabs and
everything
all kinds of stuff.
Everything starts with all that stuff.
Yep.
So it was really good. So what you been hearing in the harbor, Mike? A golf, harbor, anything?
Yeah, the golf. I've been seeing some really nice pictures of cobia people have picked up out
King
there.
King mackerel.
King mackerel, yeah. Vinny, yes, he's got a beautiful picture of a big king mackerel.
Yeah, storm twitch bait.
Yeah.
He was sitting there and he was talking about all this, you know, the diving lures, the bombers, the Rapalas, the mans, and all that. And I said, really, what'd you catch about Vinny? Storm twitch. That little tiny storm twitch. He's rocking.
Is that right?
One of our other customers has been using spoons and been trolling up nice kingfish out the boxcars. Denny.
How? What kind of spoons? The Clark?
No, they're one that he brought down from up north. So here's a good thing for you guys that are coming down from up north. Don't throw your northern crap away. Bring it with you and use it up.
Absolutely.
Oh, it was amazing. A guy came in, he's asking me about what's the best lure for this, and I showed him the rattle traps. He just threw out two boxes of them because they're not for down here.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I get requests for lures from people all the time that are either obsolete or made by a local manufacturer or old, that they've taken out and all of a sudden caught every fish they can imagine with it. And
you may have to change your hooks out and put saltwater hooks on them, but you know, that's
cheap. Well, or just a new set of hooks, you know. I mean, everything rusts down here, even I do.
I'm rusted up. I mean,
well,
you know,
on my way also.
But
yeah, if you've got lures and you're thinking about coming to Florida for a vacation or moving here, always keep in mind that a new lure, if you're good with a lure and you know how to
use
it,
you've got confidence in it.
You know, the only lure I cannot catch fish with down here that I used to use up north is an Eerie Deary. It's the only one.
Really? Okay.
My jitterbugs, I can catch fish with. The hula poppers, the meps. I mean, meps catch fish anywhere down here.
Hula
rooster tails, inline spinners.
Good snook bait.
Oh, yeah. Hula poppers are great.
So, you know.
I mean, all these lures are excellent here. And we get guys that say, well, I got his freshwater lures. I'm like, well, you good with it? Why would you want to pick up something you don't know how to use? And I mean, I've traveled a lot of countries and everything fishing, and I always take the stuff I know how to use.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to learn a new area and a new lure.
Yeah, right. That'd be like going in fly fishing for me, because I've never done it. You know, it'd be like, okay, now I got to learn this just to go fishing.
Right. And I ran up against that, and I've had to actually broaden my horizons, you know, many years ago with... Because I'd get in some areas and there's no other way to fish besides fly. So I had to learn to fly fish, had to do bait casters, had to do spinning. You never know what you're going to be up against when you travel. But learning a new lure and a new place, and if you're good with it, fish are kind of fish.
Yeah, they don't know that that lure was made by Mann's or Mirror Lure or Apollo.
Or Meps or Rooster Tail or whatever. They don't know it's a freshwater lure.
Nope.
They're thinking I'm a fish, not I'm a saltwater fish or a freshwater fish.
That's right. Giving off some good vibrations. I'm going to go check it out.
I'm sorry. Yes, I can't help myself.
One of the best all-time songs.
Yeah. So, anyway, best all-time song. What would be the lure that's been catching the most fish for the longest time for you, Mike?
Freshwater would be a June bug 7.5-inch culprit worm.
Well, I'll tell you, a woman asked me about those one time, and I said, well, they work okay. They're not great in salt water. Caught 110-pound tarpon on it.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that one. Yep. So it's freshwater, I think you still got a crossover there.
Yeah.
So, Jeff.
Head and swimming image, DTS Tennessee Shad.
Yeah, you love that lure.
That's my lure. I can throw that freshwater, saltwater, it doesn't matter.
How many species?
Everything.
I don't even think you could count how many different species you've caught on that.
I've caught just about every. I have not caught a tarpon on one. I've hooked a tarpon, but they're just not built for a tarpon.
Right.
But I haven't caught a tarpon. I haven't caught a flounder, just because it won't dive that shallow. I've caught snook, redfish, trout, mangrove snapper, sail cats. They love everything. Ladyfish. I've caught just about everything.
This is the head and swimming image.
Yeah, the swimming image. They have a spitting image, and that's a topwater lure, kind of like a walk the dog type.
Right.
And then the swimming image has a little bill on it. Kind of emulates a little finger mullet.
It's very similar to Storm Twitch.
Very similar to the Storm
Twitch.
But
it's got a very unique color pattern on it.
A little fatter on it. It has a really tight wobble on it with some rattles in it. I pitch it up against the woodwork, give it a pull right away, kick the bail over on my spinning reel, reel up the slack, give it a couple more twitches. If I don't have any luck then I'll just slow reel it back to the boat as slow as I can and change the direction when I get to the boat. I always try doing. I've caught more snook that way.
It's amazing how many people forget to figure eight or circle when they get to the boat.
Do something different, because I've had so many snook come right out from underneath the boat and nail.
Yeah, 10 inches off the side of the boat. Yeah,
and talk about a hookup then.
You swirl the lure or figure eight the lure before you pull it out of the water.
Yeah.
And it's shocking to me how many fish you can catch that way. Because you're thinking of, 40 feet away against the mangroves or on the way back, and then all you can think about is reeling it in because I want to make another cast
and get to
the fish. And if you're smart about it, you do the same thing all the way to the boat, and then at the end of the boat, make your rod, take it around the circle, or do a figure eight.
Do something with it different than just reeling it in and picking it up.
Yeah, and it's that right next to the boat. You wouldn't think they would even consider hitting there, and they just slam it.
Yeah, I've seen some big snook that made me just get all shaky inside when I've pulled the lure too quick, and I was just like, oh, man, look at that.
God, that hurts.
That line on the side of him was as wide as my thumb, But, that's probably my favorite lure, though. I've caught a lot of stuff on that. I like spoons, but I always go back to that swimming image, no matter what comes out new. I got a couple twitching sticks in the boat, and I've thrown them, and I've caught a couple reds here and there, but I always find myself back with that swimming image.
Well, I always say one of the biggest things we sell here at Fish and Franks is confidence.
That is very true.
And really, whatever your favorite lure is, it is probably the best lure for you to use.
Yeah, and that's a good thing for the people that are coming down. It's just like, just use what you know, and you've got confidence in it already, then you'll throw it longer.
If you've got a guy who's throwing an inline spinner for muskie, and they throw, they get these big, it's a wire with a weight on the front and a little flasher on it, then some bucktail on the back and everything. And my kid brought down a black one that he musky fishes with.
Right.
And he caught pretty much everything with it. Mm. I mean, it was, he wrecked it here. I mean, they bent the hell out of the wire on it. But, when you're looking at this stuff, never give up your favorite stuff.
No.
So.
And I sure wouldn't sell two boxes of lures before I came down. But I would sell that inboard-outboard boat up north.
Yeah, if you've got an IO on your boat or an inboard on your boat and you're moving to Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda area, pretty much sell it where you're at.
Yeah.
If you're going to Englewood, it's not as bad.
If you're going to offshore, if you're going to offshore fish with it, they're great. They're very stable. They got, you know, nice weight in the back, and they ride nice. But
the problem with the IOs up here is our brackish water.
Yeah.
It's not salt. It's not fresh.
Yeah.
And it's technically, according to law, salt water.
Yeah.
But I've actually seen a guy have his boat in there, bottom paint and everything, ate a hole in the outdrive in less than 6 months.
Yeah, I don't know about that. And then our sandbars are wide and low.
Wide and low, and there's no way to run an IO over a sandbar or an inboard.
Yeah.
You're just too fixed on your draft. That's why we use outboards.
Yeah.
But if you were moving to Englewood or Tampa, Sarasota might be kind of eam one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the more either pure salt or pure fresh you have, the better an IO or an inboard would be.
Yep.
But in this area right here, no, they don't work.
Yeah, outboards, no jet drives.
Yeah, you know. The only problem you have with jet drive is you want to stay off the flats with a jet drive. It should be the perfect thing, like a jet ski or a jet drive boat. Should be perfect back on the flats. But as you're going along, it sucks the sand up.
Grass.
And the grass, and it, first thing that happens is it plugs up the intakes, and that can tend to burn out the impeller and the motor. The other thing that happens is sand blasts that impeller, and your seals start to go, then everything starts getting weak. It really will shorten the life of a jet ski dramatically running it shallow.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, but that's why you would buy it, is to run in nothing, but it's really not good for it.
Yeah.
Anything you can think of, Mike?
We've touched about everything so far, but we got a lot of new people coming in.
Yep.
Almost every day I have two or three people coming in that's been referred to us, which thank you.
Yes.
And thank everybody for that.
Well, be careful when you're dealing with Mike. I was coming into work, and I'm pulled in the back parking lot, and I'm walking in, and I look over, and I had bought a different vehicle. I got a 2007 Toyota truck I just bought this year. And there's a guy with a brand new Toyota, and I was like, hey, man, I like your truck. It's really pretty. You know, it looks almost like mine.
Sure.
And he goes, this is Mike's fault. And I went, what? He says, yeah, I blame this truck. And all that. He says, come here, look. And he pulls down the tailgate, and under the topper, he's got all his rods laid out across the back in this rack, and he's got this drawer, this box that pulls out on slide bars.
Oh, nice.
And all his fishing stuff's in there and everything. He said, this is all Mike's fault. this was your fault, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, did he say it with a smile on his face?
Oh, yeah. He was loving life. But I mean, the truck, the slide drawer he built, the tackle, the rods and reels. I mean, he comes in, that's what he wanted to do. He was coming in to see Mike. He says, Frank, he says, your guy just cost me, and I'm not going to tell you, but literally it was $40,000.
Right.
Mike just cost me $40,000 with the truck and the tackle and the all this other stuff. But it was all your fault, Mike. Yeah. But he was loving you for it.
Yeah.
He's having a great time.
He is having a great time learning to fish. So, and that's Johan.
Johan? Yeah.
Johan.
Well, there's not much that separates us from anybody else. You know, really, other than
just you guys
talk to and the live bait behind the counter. So
Everything's about you guys. A building's just a building, and the name of a store is just the name of the store.
Yep.
But
the people
I happen
inside
to be
is what makes it.
One of the luckiest people on the planet. I'm surrounded by terrific people.
I feel very lucky too, as far as that goes.
So, anyway, I guess about anything else we need to go over today.
Not today. I guess we better end it.
Yeah,
we got to get back to work. I got a mountain of paperwork back there, and I've been just avoiding it like the plague. But I wanted to get a couple more radio fishings out, and we are going to try and get back on a regular schedule. My health's getting better, but I do have the Fort Myers Boat Show this week. We're going to be down in Fort Myers Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the big Fort Myers Boat Show between the two bridges. So if you're in the Fort Myers area, you want to stop by and say hi, Captain Greg will be there. Jeff will be there on Thursday. I think Mike's going to be there one day. But if you want to meet the pirate crew, stop down to the Fort Myers Boat Show if you're down that area. We'll also be at the Bonita Springs Boat Show, the Charlotte County Boat Show. And I forget where all else. We're all over the place. But it's going to be a busy season.
Yeah, it will.
And, but anyway, with Jeff in the chair across from me, Jeff is a fishing instructor. And if you really want to learn this area, and he will go on the boat with you, show you where to go, what to do, how to do it, and whether you need helps with your knots, your rigging, or just even where to go and how to enjoy the place.
Just enjoy yourself.
And Jeff's really good at that. And Captain Mike here, he's kind of semi-retired out of the captain business, but come in and talk to Mike, and don't worry, it probably won't cost you $40,000.
I was going to say that was lead in, and that wasn't right. Quite.
Well, we have rods that start at $9.35. You can buy a Shimano reel at Fish and Frank's for $10.99. Brand new Shimano reel for $10.99. Combo starting in the teens, going up. Now, we do have the $1,400 spinning reels and the
$600 rods.
$600 rods and all that other stuff. But, you know, if you just want to get started, you don't really want to throw that much money in your.
No.
See if you
it
like
might be
it
a great
first.
Rod and reel, but it might not suit you for what you're doing.
Yeah, the best thing to do is pick up a little bit of something. It can always be the nephew, brother-in-law rod, you know, later.
That's right.
You know, you look at them and go, oh, you know, this was my first rod in Florida. You take care of this. Well, you know, they don't have to know it was 30, you know, 30 bucks.
Get a lot of guys with their kids coming in and they want to buy them a pole, you know, and I just say, well, why don't you give them your pole and then you can buy a new one for yourself, you know, and they're like, he's already using it. Okay, you know. Yeah. So, yeah. So then
hey,
he goes
I grew up with hand-me-downs.
Yep.
That was the best way to go. You know, I got dad's pole.
Yep.
You know, that was always cool. I thought it was neat.
Yep. Most kids like that.
Yeah, and now they, you know, buy him a new pole. Give me your pole. It means more.
Yeah.
You know, this was dad's pole.
That's right.
So,
One thing I like to, you know, maybe say is when you come in, if you've got an idea of what you want to spend, you know, let us know right away. You know, I feel kind of strange asking you.
You see, I ask all the time.
Yeah, I know, but that's you know, we're all
but
different.
But then I don't have any problems with anything. I just ask anybody any question. You know, I don't care.
I don't want to put it, I don't want to put anybody in a box, you know, or whatever, you know.
Well,
or
I
make them uncomfortable maybe, you know.
Well, I've never really found it makes somebody uncomfortable. I'm looking at them and I say, well, how much are you looking to spend? Right. And they're kind of iffy, and I say, well, do you fish a lot or are you just getting started?
You start breaking it down.
Yeah, and one of the things that I tend to do is if they're just getting started, I'd really rather sell them just a combo, an inexpensive, decent combo, because that's more appropriate.
Right.
I can't see spending $200 or $300 if you don't even know you like fishing.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
I mean, you might go out there and just go, you know, I don't like this. I mean, there could be something wrong with you.
That's
you know,
right.
You might not like fishing.
You might be broken. Yeah.
You might be broken. Yeah. You might not like this. You know? But it's true. And it's much better to go appropriate with the people.
Right.
And like the guy you and I were working with earlier, Mike, and we put the big weights on the rod. Because he's looking and trying to believe what the manufacturers write on the rod.
Right.
And you cannot believe what they put on there. It doesn't make sense because it's just what one guy prints on it.
Yeah.
So if you take a 20 to 40 in one rod and then go to a different brand and hit 20 to 40, they're completely different.
Totally different. Yep.
So we put a big weight on the end of the rod and drop it down, and the best thing to do is feel it and see what you think it's going to do.
Right.
And use your own arm and everything, you know, and we'll help you with that. And we'll show you how we test rods and get to figure out what what's best ones for you. But it's not all about what you spend. It's about what you feel.
Yeah.
Sometimes the less expensive rod is way more appropriate than the expensive rods.
Yep.
And expensive, we got the new Gary Loomis Edge stuff, one of the first people in Florida for the new Edge.
Right.
Absolutely gorgeous. A bit pricey.
A bit pricey.
But, oh my God, is it pretty. All carbon fiber handles, carbon fiber rods, long grain carbon. I mean, this is some of the most cutting edge fishing tackle available.
Yep.
But you...
Probably not going to be your first starter pole.
It's not a starter pole. No. If you've been in this and you want to treat yourself to something absolutely gorgeous, that Gary Loomis rod is spectacular. But, you know, from $9.35 to $600 something, you got to choose somewhere in between there.
Right,
that's right.
You know, so anyway, anything else, guys?
Can't think of anything.
All right, let's see. What the heck? Yeah, I'm not sure where that went. We did cover hunting in here, though.
Yeah, we did.
We did do that, and I think we'll use this.
Boy, you bothered me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing instead. wishing. Oh, yeah.
This is Fishin' Frank, and thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next Radio Fishin'. Bye-bye.